Hello, I'm Priya Bates, President of Inner Strength Communication based in Toronto, Canada.
And I'm Adwita Patel, Director of Comms Rebel based in Manchester, UK.
And we're co-founders of A Leader Like Me.
We've also recently published a book with Kogan Page called Building a Culture of Inclusivity: Effective Internal Communication for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion.
In season three of our podcast, we will introduce you to diverse voices where we talk about the role of communication personally and professionally in building inclusive cultures.
We hope you enjoy our podcast. In this episode, we chat to the brilliant Anne Malinga, who is the CEO of Brilliant Inc.
She and her fearless team of experts partner with companies to assess and improve their workplace experience. And we've always enjoyed any conversations we've had with Anne, first starting virtually, because we introduced ourselves and learned about one another during COVID virtually, but we've met since in person, and she's such an incredible person.
And her company does some absolutely fantastic work in the space of inclusion. And we knew we had to chat with Anne when we decided to launch our season three of A Leader Like Me podcast. And the conversation is just fantastic.
I hope you enjoy listening.
Hello, Anne. Thank you so much for joining Priya and I on our podcast episode around the work that you do at Brilliant Inc. Would you be able to just share a little bit about who you are for our listeners, where you're based as well? Because we pride ourselves on our kind of global guests that we have on our podcast, and also the kind of work that you do at Brilliant Inc. as well, if that's okay.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you both for having me. I have known and admired both of you and your work for a long time, so I'm really excited to be a part of this conversation. I am Anne Mellinger. I am the CEO of Brilliant Inc., and Brilliant Inc. is an employee engagement consultancy, a communications agency. Basically, we say if it has to do with employee communications, we do it. And the company's been around since 2008. We are a fully virtual company. We were virtual before it was cool to be virtual. Our team, I'm based here in New York City, but our team really spans the entire US. We are a US-based agency as of now. And so we have folks all the way from New York out to the Bay Area, Southern California, couple in Texas, North Carolina, really span the whole US. And our team is comprised of both strategists, people who are really thinking about and doing the work, as well as graphic designers, videographers, project managers, researchers. We've got a couple very strong self-proclaimed data geeks on the team. And so really, we try to offer our clients an end-to-end solution to whatever their employee communications challenge is.
Now, Anne, we were introduced to you because we're all on the speaker circuit. We've heard you present on internal communication, and we've been introduced to your team. And you also supported our Diversity in Action conference, which we really appreciated. What you talked about in our Diversity in Action conference was your inclusive language guide. And I'd love a little bit of background on how that came to be.
Sure, absolutely. Yes, we love supporting the work that you all do, and certainly have used, we've been really devoted to using the platform that both I have as a leader, but that we have as an agency to make sure that we're amplifying voices and topics that are really important to us. And certainly anything around diversity, equity, and inclusion is very important and near and dear to us. It's a topic that we've been focusing on throughout our entire existence, but certainly, in the post-pandemic period, it has become increasingly important to our clients and therefore something that we've really focused on. We did a lot of work internally to think about, how do we as a small company make sure that we're walking the walk and that we are, holding ourselves to the same high expectations that we hold our clients to. And one of the things that we really did over the last few years is look within our own organization and identify that we needed to add some expertise in this area. Beyond our own personal expertise, we needed people that had the right lived experiences to be able to talk intelligently about the importance of inclusive language, the importance of, enabling equity within organizations of all shapes and sizes. And one of the great decisions that I made as a leader was to hire Dr. Farida Habib, who is a diversity, equity, and inclusion expert from academia. It was our first PhD hire, probably not our last, we'll see. But Farida is just wonderful and brought to our team a very different type of experience and expertise that we've been helping to bring to a lot of our clients. Farida was a professor of language. And one of the very first things that she did for us and for our clients is to really help at a very basic level, one way that you can make sure that you're being more inclusive is by looking at the language that you use and the terminology that you use. I don't have to tell you this, but whenever we talk to clients about this big topic of diversity, equity, and inclusion, it can feel very overwhelming, very daunting. People don't know where to get started. Communicators don't know if it's their place to do anything. And inclusive language is very accessible and it is very relevant to everything we do, right? Everything we do from writing, communications, to helping leaders with their slides for a town hall, to, developing a toolkit for managers. We just are using words constantly. And so this idea of understanding how you choosing different kinds of words can make a big difference was a topic that was really appealing to our clients. It's been a topic that we've been bringing out both to clients, to conferences, like your conference, and we'll continue to be doing so over the next many months, because people just want to know, what can I do?
Yeah. I mean, it's refreshing to hear an agency owner talk about the importance of inclusive language and the importance of diversity, equity, and inclusion in general. Because, you made a point just then about people not really understanding or recognizing whether it's their role, especially within the communications industry. Priya and I have often had conversations with other communication professionals, whether or not it's their responsibility or not to lead the discussion on some of the more, let's say, uncomfortable topics that we can often come across in the organizations that we support and work in, which can lead to, the kind of, is it my place? Is it not my place? We often say, I think one of our previous guests, Adina White, once said, if it's not about me, then I'm paraphrasing. It wasn't exactly how she said it, but she said, if it's not about me, then it's not for me. And I think sometimes when you live in a dominant culture environment or you work in a dominant culture environment, it does feel like that at times.
Yeah.
So the clients that you work with and support, have you faced any challenges with leaders when it comes to discussions around inclusive language and inclusion and diversity? And what has been, have you got any kind of tips and techniques or any advice to our listeners who may be feeling a bit apprehensive about raising certain issues because their leader is just so reluctant to discuss it? What has worked for you to kind of bring in experts and specialists to support organizations with things like this?
It's a great question, and it's certainly one that we've grappled with. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, the challenges are countless. And I think probably one of the biggest challenges that we've seen is that just every organization is in a completely different place on this. And we just have to meet organizations and individual leaders where they are. I think that's the most important thing, is that it can be very easy to look into your organization and say, oh, my organization isn't going to put out a statement on this, or my leader is not ready to talk about that, or they're dismissing this as a trend that's just going to fall by the wayside in 5 years, so they're not interested. And I hear that, and I understand that, and I feel that frustration. We felt it. We have, banged our head against the wall right there with you. But the fact of the matter is, there is something that everyone can do. And so we as an agency try to focus with our clients and anyone we're talking to just move the needle that little bit, just nudge. I remember we did a blog post that had a graphic of somebody just nudging the needle, pushing, you know, feel Sisyphean to try to get it, you know, up. But if you can just nudge the needle, that little, you know, a 1% difference is a difference. And when you think about the hundreds of years of racist systems that exist in this country and all over the world, I mean, every little bit does help. And so I think that's really been our focus, is to let's understand where you are today. Let's recognize what your challenges are, and everyone can move the needle in some way. Even if you're not ready to put pronouns on your, you know, in your email signature, that's okay. But at least understanding why that's something that people do. If you're not ready to, you know, make sweeping policy changes, that's okay. But maybe you can at least understand the impact of, you know, putting an adjective before somebody's name versus after, and how that can impact them. So, you know, as part of the work that Farida really leads for our agency, she created this inclusive language guide and workshop and training that goes along with it. But the guide is available on our website. We encourage everyone to go and check it out because it does have very easy, simple changes that you can make to your communications to make them more inclusive. And then that's the place to start. Start simple, start small, meet your organization and your leaders where they are. Even the most reluctant leader cannot object to simple word changes. At least I hope not.
One of the things you'll really enjoy in our upcoming book, Anne, is we've got what we call the DEI evolution. And it's how you get from exist, where you are today, to embed, which is the where this is just the way it works around here. And and I think that we've thought that through too, that it is a journey, it is an evolution of sorts, and you need to take it one step at a time in order to progress. And exactly. I think I know that we referred to your language glide in one of our chapters as well. So we appreciated you sharing that resource with us. Talk to me a little bit about allyship. Right? Your role as an ally. I had an interesting conversation about Indigenous terms around my table, friends, neighbors. And it was really interesting to see people react to, you know, why can't I use this term? Mm-hmm. What wasn't said is it felt like it is my right to use this term. I'm comfortable using this term. I've always used this term. What's wrong with everyone else? And it was fascinating to have that conversation with those folks and say, what you need to be asking yourself is, why is it so important for you to be right?
Yeah.
Versus be empathetic.
Yeah.
Because essentially, once you know you're using a term that makes somebody else uncomfortable, you're saying that my comfort is more important than yours. And when you say my comfort is more important than yours, this is privilege and supremacy, right?
Exactly.
It's something that people don't think about. And it's like having those conversations. So talk to me about your journey as, you know, you are, you know, an ally from our perspective, but others, will be allies for you.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
So we all play a role in allyship in some way, shape, or form. But talk to me about what that means to you.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I think it is. It's so important. I mean, I came up through my career and have had a lot of the success that I've had, thanks in large part to white men who have paved the way for me. You know, it is the way that, unfortunately or fortunately, however you choose to look at it, this is the way that the work world exists. But I agree with you. I think allyship is so important. It is another one of those areas that we can make an immediate difference. Again, when you look at these subjects, these topics, and what's happening in the world today, it's so overwhelming. It's so difficult. It can be so exhausting. There's so much talk about the exhaustion of DEI work. But allyship is something that's very actionable that you can do. And it starts exactly how you described it, Priya. It's sit down at the table, reach out, get to know people who look and experience different things than you do. You have to start somewhere with that understanding of another person's perspective, and then using the platform or the opportunities or the access that you have to increase those opportunities for others. You know, one example is that I myself have practiced is I love getting invited to speak at conferences. As a woman, we were just talking about this before we started recording. As a woman, it's great to get invitations to speak on a stage. I treasure those opportunities, but I don't want to be up there with a bunch of white men and women. And if I'm not seeing enough diversity on your agenda, I'm going to say, why don't you go invite this huge long list of highly qualified speakers that I can point you to instead. It looks like you need, you really need to think a little more deeply about who you're inviting to speak on the stage. And I've done that and I've been happy to do it. And I think that's just one way. That's maybe a bigger way. I have a platform. I want to share it with others, but there are small ways, just like you said, let's have a conversation about, you know, what does it mean? What, you know, I myself have been trying to really increase my learning around trans issues because those are becoming more and more pervasive, especially here in the United States. And, you know, really wanting to educate myself. What are the different terms? What are the phrases that are hurtful and harmful? And I can't possibly understand that by doing a Google search. I need to sit down. I need to talk to people. I need to understand their lived experiences. And it is hard. It's hard to acknowledge when you are centering yourself. It's hard to acknowledge and admit white supremacy. But as soon as you can sort of move past some of that guilt and shame, which they're really, you know, shouldn't be, those are not productive feelings. I think that you can really make a difference. So I just really try to focus on action. For me, I definitely have found myself in moments feeling that guilt and that shame, but you have to push past it and say, this is the reality. This is the system that I was born into. Whether I like it or not, I can't deny that it exists. I can't deny that I've gotten out of parking tickets because of the color of my skin. And, that is just the reality of it. And focusing on action and what you can do versus fighting against those feelings has always been my approach.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree with you there, Anne, in terms of not allowing shame stop you progressing, because, I mean, it's no secret that I'm a massive fan of Brené Brown. And I feel like if I say her name several times in various different podcasts, I will manifest a conversation with her at one point. But I'll keep saying it. But Brené Brown, as those of you who don't know her, is somebody who talks about shame and vulnerability quite a lot. And she also talks a lot around how shame can stop us being the person that we need to be to make a difference to others, because we are so deep rooted in that space that we can't see what's happening Absolutely. In front of us. And as soon as you accept the fact that, yes, we may be wrong in this instance, but what can I do now to change, life or things for others, then that is what can help us kind of progress. And we, in throughout the entire book that Priya and I have written, we always talk about progress, not perfect. And that's what we want people to remember, that it's not about being perfect. Because, even though we've written a book about inclusive cultures, and even though you have done extensive research and investment in your own business to bring in the right expertise, it doesn't mean that we are now the experts and, preaching to others about being perfect, because guess what, we're not.
Absolutely.
We make mistakes, we make errors, we fail at things, we make assumptions because of our biases, and it's just acknowledging that and remembering that these things can are part of the human being that we are. And if we're not robots, we're not AI, right? We're not robots. We are going to make mistakes. And it's important. I'm not saying AI doesn't make mistakes, it definitely does, but we have to kind of acknowledge that. And I think one of the things that you just said to me about this representation, and I've been talking about representation for, it feels like many, many years, to be honest, but it has been definitely a long time. And the reason I started my own event in the UK was because I didn't see representation on stage, and I didn't see representation on various podcasts and people contributing in terms of their thought leadership, which is why I created the underrepresented speaker list. But when I have challenged, so you said, which I love, when you said, if I look at the agenda of an event that I've been asked to speak at and I don't see representative speakers, and I will say to the organizer, look, I need you to, you know, I'm going to step away from this opportunity, and I think you should bring in somebody who's more representative of the publics that we serve, you know, etc. But I have to admit that when I have raised challenge with others who haven't seen this, they get very defensive, and I do think that's peppered in shame. When you have approached organizers of events, or when you have spoken to leaders in organizations about their demographic setup, cognitive and demographic as well, obviously, in terms of their, you know, we always say to people, don't really look around the table, have you got fair representation compared to the setup of your organization? What's their normal reaction to you when you kind of challenge them? How do organizers respond to you?
It's such a mix. It really is a mix. You know, sometimes they don't want to hear it, and we just, you know, take a step back, and there's plenty of other events out there. And it's the same with with organizations. Look, some organizations are more open than others, and that's our job as consultants, right? When we go in, we really have to assess the situation and understand, not just assess where are they on this spectrum, right, of their diversity, equity, and inclusion journey, but also what level of openness are they bringing to the dialogue, and are they willing to consider certain things, because there have been times as we've been doing more and more of this work where we've gone in hard. You know, we've gone in and said, look, this is where you are today. This is where you want to be. You have a huge gap to fill. We recommend these 12 things. And they just panic and freeze. And that's the last thing we want. Again, we need progress, not perfection. We need progress. And so you do have to look at and consider, who are you talking to? Where are they on their journey? What is their mindset and their openness and willingness to consider? Plenty of the organizations that I've worked with, though, have been very grateful for those recommendations. Like, oh, I didn't even know that this speaker was out there. I just came to you because you're on my list and I know you and you're a known quantity. So a lot of times they're appreciative, and you just never know until you try.
Yeah. And just on your, you know, you said that you're exploring at the moment, you recognize that trans rights and the some of the challenges facing the groups where trans women and trans men belong to is an area that you're not comfortable with, or not aware of, sorry, or educated in.
Yeah.
How would you say to others who may be struggling to acknowledge how they could maybe move forward with some of their allyship? What's the kind of steps that you would say they should take or recommend they take to start this exploration journey of theirs in becoming an ally? Because one of the things I do have a bit of a bugbear about, or, you know, I struggle with, is when other people self-allocate them as allies, you know, so when other people say, I'm an ally for this. And I'm like, I don't think you can self-allocate yourself as an ally. I think, you know, the group that you're supposed to be supporting can say they're an ally, which I find really interesting. But how would you say, you know, to those who want to take a bit more of an interest or want to feel a bit more educated, where would they start? Because like you said, there's so much information being thrown at people right now. What's your process in that?
And I said it sort of flippantly earlier about, you know, you can't just go Google, but, you know, look, Google is a great place to start. Start by looking for just some basic resources and information around terminology, things that you don't know, things that you don't understand. It's a good place to start. And there's so many wonderful resources out there on the web right now. You know, of course, it's really important to make sure that any information you're getting online is coming from a credible source. Unfortunately, we really have to emphasize that these days. But there are also really great trainings. One of the types of trainings that I've really appreciated is bystander training, because I think that that's something that can really help you, that if you feel that you are outside of any group that's being othered in any sort of way, and you don't necessarily know what to do or say, those are the kinds of trainings that I personally have found to be really helpful. If I'm riding on the subway in New York City and I see somebody harassing another person, what can I do? Or if I'm sitting in a meeting and I see that someone's being overlooked or being ignored, or, you know, being microaggressed in some way, how can I help and how can I support? That's another really great way. And especially within larger organizations, I think it's just going and finding what ERGs or, you know, resource groups exist within the organization? Are there people within your company that have already self-identified? And if so, you know, go check out their events, go see what they're doing and what those groups are talking about, to really, exactly as Priya was describing earlier, to get, sit around at a table, shed some of that ego as much as you can, and don't be afraid to be curious and ask questions. Now, that's also a fine line, right? The last thing you want to do is, you know, find that one person who now has become your go-to source. And every time something happens, or there's a tragedy, or there's a, you know, some celebrity, you know, comment or whatever, that you go to that person and constantly ask them, because we want to be mindful about overwhelming, you know, anybody who is in any sort of, you know, group that is being disproportionately burdened with these kinds of questions. So it's a fine line, but having allies, having people that you can talk to, educating yourself, bystander training is a really, really good way to start.
And I think that, you know, there is an opportunity. Things have changed with your organization as the conversation around representation has evolved over the last few years. You've actually been more proactive about looking for differences in order to support your workforce. And we talk a little bit about that culture fit versus culture add, right? Yeah. This opportunity to add to your group. What have you noticed since you've actually sought more representation with Brilliant Inc.? What has changed for you? Has it impacted results? Has it impacted reputation? What are the impacts that you have seen as a business
owner? It's impacted everything. I mean, there's no question. It's impacted everything. And look, I've never been shy about being honest about our journey, because I think it's helpful for other people to think about. Like most startups, you know, we established as a company in 2008, and we just hired people we knew, and we just continued down that path. We hired, you know, you hire the people from your circles, you hire the people who think like you, so that you can just move quickly. You're trying to build a company, build a practice, grow, and you want people that can finish your sentences and that you barely even have to communicate with, and they can just do things the same way you do. And that's really good to a point. Then you suddenly realize, hey, I've got a company of not just a bunch of white women that look and sound a lot like me, but also we think a lot the same. We share a lot of the same experiences. And that is getting in the way of us being able to innovate and being able to reach new people, new places. And so really going out and being intentional about where we're going and looking for people and expanding our networks has been really effective. And that starts with, yes, being super intentional about increasing just the diversity, the look of our organization. And we had to get very comfortable just saying that and being honest about the fact that, look, we had an all white team and we were not okay with that. And we had to make intentional changes to that. And what has happened, what has resulted is it's a cycle, a virtuous cycle, right? The more people that you hire that look and think differently, the more people in their networks that you're reaching, the more people that they're referring to come in, both as clients and employees and contractors and partners. And so as a result, our network has just blossomed and grown in so many ways in the last several years that I could never imagine. You know, again, hiring a professor of language from academia has brought us to see things in a completely different way and to consider things in a completely different way and to reach a completely different, group of people. It's changed us inside as well. Look, we are coming up to the end of Ramadan. And, you know, we know that because we have multiple people on our team who are observing Ramadan and they have the support of the whole company to say, like, hope you're hanging in there. You know, let's not schedule meetings maybe at this time when it's the end of the fasting period and you're really low energy. You know, just having a different awareness has made us all that much closer. And you know, look, it's not all sunshine and roses. I don't want to sugarcoat it. The more differently minded people you bring in, the more debate and discussion that you're going to have. And I would also argue that that's been a really good thing for us too. You know, we have more pushback and disagreement now within my team than we've ever had before. And I think that that's done nothing but good things for us, really and truly.
That's amazing. And you know, I can't even begin to tell you how refreshing it is. I said it before, but to hear you speak so openly and honestly and with so much passion in this area of work is what gives Priya and I hope in a way. You know, we wrote the book because we wanted to encourage leaders like yourself to take that step into making a difference so they can build and cultivate an inclusive culture within the remit that they have. You know, we never really talk about it's not about telling people they have to fix all the problems in the world
Right.
and, you know, all the systemic biases and all the oppression that people are facing. All of that will contribute to change. And I think to,
Yes.
you know, you said it before, is that being that 1% better than what we were yesterday can have a huge impact. And I think what you've just shared there about the challenge that you also face when you do have representation and different thinking and different minds, it's not a necessarily a bad thing. It's just a different way of working. And I think if people can appreciate that, the world would definitely be a much more inclusive place where everyone can thrive and do the best that they can do, right? To help businesses do the best they can do for others as well. I think, Matt, you know, I've always kind of believed in this whole leave the world a better place than when you first arrived. You know,
Exactly.
philosophy can make a big difference in what we're doing. Thank you so much, Anne, for your time, your wisdom, your tips, your techniques. We will share all Anne's details in show notes if you want to find Anne and connect with her. Where's the best place where people can connect with you, Anne? Where do you normally hang out?
LinkedIn is great. We're sort of not hanging out on Twitter these days, but we are active on LinkedIn, both at Brilliant Inc. or at Ann Mellinger. I love connecting with people. I love talking with people. I love helping people that are, you know, looking to break into this space and maybe don't see a lot of people like them and feel intimidated by that. Reach out, because I'm especially happy to do whatever I can, to help.
Amazing. Thank you. And we'll also link to that fantastic inclusive language guide that you've got as well, which I know is accessible to everybody to download from your
Absolutely.
website.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much,
Final.
Jan.
Thank you. Thank you
Thanks,
both.
Anne.
And
Sorry.
thank you for
I
your
was just going to
hard
say,
work.
no, you're welcome. I was just going to say, any final thoughts, Anne? Anything that you want to share with the community before we close off our chit chat?
No, I continue to be so deeply appreciative of the work that the two of you do. I cannot wait for your book. I'm counting down the days for it. And I think just all of us continuing to learn and grow from each other, learning to, you know, to share, to acknowledge that we're not perfect, to acknowledge that we're not there, and to just keep moving that needle just ever so slightly together. All these little nudges are going to make a big difference. So, you know, that's sort of my parting hope. And again, just thank you again for sharing this space with me.
Yeah. Thank you. Perfect note to end on. Thank you, Anne. Thank you so much for listening to our A Leader Like Me podcast.
Find us on socials and at aleaderlikeme.com.
And please do read our new book, Building a Culture of Inclusivity, Effective Internal Communication for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. You can buy our book from anywhere you buy your books online.
And a discount code for our listeners is available. Just use the code ALLME20 at www.koganpage.com.
And please do reach out for us for any internal communication, change management, and DEI communication training and support your organization needs.
We have keynotes, workshops, and consulting programs available. Email us at info@aleaderlikeme.com.